Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. We help you get unstuck so you can do what you love and get paid what you're worth. I'm your host, David Schreiner Khan.
I'm stuck and I had just gotten engaged and I told my then fiance, now wife, that I'm going to have to go find another job because this isn't working. I can't keep doing this. And she told me that, well, we'll figure it out.
Today on episode 430 of Smashing the Plateau, I'm here with Jason Resnick, freelancer and founder of Res.com. I'm going to ask Jason how he stopped the feast or famine cycle that most freelancers experience, what it took for him to implement his business turnaround strategy, what the most important elements are to build a successful freelance business, and much more. You can read a description of our discussion, information about Jason, including links and resources we mentioned in this episode, on our website at smashingtheplateau.com. Email me and let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's David at smashingtheplateau.com. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. Please share this episode with friends and colleagues to help them smash the plateau. Now let's welcome Jason Resnick. Jason is super passionate about helping other freelancers build profitable and sustainable businesses so that they can live a life of their own design. By specializing and niching down your business, you can build recurring revenue and increase profits. Jason, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Jason, what's a freelancer?
Freelancer. That's always a great question because it depends on who you talk to. For me, a freelancer is somebody who serves clients, builds a business, and has the freedom and flexibility of their own time to be able to do the things that they want.
So the free part is something about scheduling time.
Well, to be honest with you, I actually did an origin story sort of thing on the word freelancer. Because it was a word that I struggled with for a long time. Calling myself one, should I call myself a consultant? Should I call myself a developer? And so I was like, let me go to the source. Let me find out what the word means, right? And when you break it apart in the origin of freelancer, it's actually pretty cool. But the first word of freelancer being used was in reference of these mercenaries. And they were basically, it was two separate words. They were freelancers. And in the context of it, they were Bedouin warriors that used lances as their weapon, right? So other empires and organizations and tribes would essentially hire them, quote unquote, to fight for, on their behalf. So when I really started looking into it, if it's two words, I looked at where free came from and lance came from. And free goes back to a Germanic origin of basically to love, right? And lance has a French origin to it that says to thrust completely. So for me, when I found that out was, well, if that kind of makes sense if you are a freelancer, because for one, you should be doing what you love and you put 110% into everything so that you can live the life that you want. And so I then embraced the term freelancer. And I call myself since. And in the context of business, a lot of times freelancers are looked at as low-cost help, you know, flaky, these kind of like terms that businesses do not want a relationship with. So, and for me, that's what I was always fighting up against. And I didn't like it. And that's why I was like, okay, am I a consultant? Well, consultant also has its own connotations to it, you know, more strategy than implementation, but I was kind of both. So a web developer, then there's that expectation to it. So for me, it was a big struggle for a long time. I would ask a lot of people, what do you call yourself? A business owner, consultant, a freelancer, you know, and after doing this research, I said, well, for me, freelancer fits. because it's what I do. I love the clients that I work with. I love the work that I do for them in helping them grow their businesses. And it's allowing me to live the kind of life that I want.
So if you meet somebody at a cocktail party and the person says, Jason, what do you do? What's your answer?
I'll tell them that I'm a freelance web developer.
Cool. And in the work that you do with other freelancers, because I know that's a big part of what you do, What are the pain points that you hear about most?
Most, it's the feast or famine cycle. If you ask any freelancer, now I've been a freelancer for parts of 15 years, full-time for almost a decade, and they'll inevitably say, I need clients. I need to get clients. Or I need more leads, right? Like that's the resounding term, the resounding questioner, the resounding pain point that any freelancer is going to say. But when it comes right down to it, it's not necessarily that they need more clients. They just need better clients.
And what is the subtext of better?
Well, it means a lot of times freelancers don't look at themselves serious enough to command better prices, to ask for better, you know, better working relationships with clients, to have difficult conversations with clients, those reality checkpoints, those kind of things. And when that happens, then they find themselves in a self-deprecating position, right? They'll take on, you know, lower projects because they need to pay the bills. And as soon as you do that, that's when that feast or famine cycle starts. When you command better prices, when you command better clients and better relationships from those clients, like I look at my clients like partners. I respect their business. They respect my business. We each have our own processes and way about doing things and running our own businesses. And we work together because we want the same thing in the end. Right? I want my clients to be successful, which makes me successful. And my clients want to be successful, so they're going to help me help them, right? And a lot of times is when you get down to that feast or famine cycle, work, maybe hourly rates, things of that nature, where you bypass all of those processes that you might put in place for your ideal clients just to get that one project because you need to pay your rent, then that's usually the downfall of that project because things won't be aligned. You won't have the utmost respect for the clients. They won't have the utmost respect for you. They won't look at you as more than maybe a pair of hands on a keyboard, right? And just basically, you know, a short order cook kind of person. And that's when you get stuck in that feast or famine cycle because couple of weeks in, another bill's going to come. You're going to need another project. And you do the same process over and over and over again. And you all of a sudden, you wonder, what happened? How did I get to this position? What went wrong? And you find that instead of, you know, the job that you just left, which had one boss, you have 12. And that's not sustainable.
So how do you get out of it when you're at what sounds like a pretty low point in your relationship with your business and with your clients?
Yeah, you have to. Well, I mean, I was there.
So what did you do?
So what I did was a lot of self-reflection and a lot of hours, literally at night on the couch. What I did was I analyzed all the projects that I had going on, past projects. I thought about the types of clients that I wanted to work with, the types of clients that I didn't want to work with, the types of projects that I wanted to work on, the industries that I wanted to work in, and ultimately the people that I wanted to help versus maybe the people that, you know, I didn't have as much interest in helping. And I went through and I wrote it all down and put on a piece of paper weighted values to these things, you know, characteristics, profitability, traits, whether it was location-based or not, and weighted values on it of how important it was to me. And what I wound up finding out at the end of this, and I didn't know I was doing this initially, it was just kind of like, okay, I'm stuck. And I had just gotten engaged and I told my then fiance, now wife, that I'm going to have to go find another job because this isn't working. I can't keep doing this. And she told me that, well, we'll figure it out. I know that you don't want to get another job. I know that you want to do what you want to do for our lives and we'll figure it out. So I had to figure it out, right? To have that support and have basically the girl that you're going to marry tell you not to get a job. For me, that was like, okay, well, you know, let's figure this out. So that's why it was a lot of self-reflection on me. What was I doing wrong? What was I doing right? And at the end of this exercise, it was four nights sitting anywhere between 4 and 6 hours a night on the couch. At the end of it, I had what my ideal client was and the red flags to vet clients and put clients through and tick the boxes and make sure that they didn't essentially become red flags. And when I did that, the very next lead that I got, I put through that process and that inevitably was a better client. So the next lead after that. And what I was doing there, and I didn't realize it then, but I was niching down. I was specializing my business. I wasn't just a Ruby on Rails developer anymore. I wasn't custom PHP developer anymore. At that point, I was a WooCommerce developer because those were the types of projects and businesses that I wanted to work with.
And how, fast forward, how long did it take until your business was turned around?
Well, oddly enough, it was 6 months. I had told my wife, after I went through this, it was about a month later, I said, I want to 10X my monthly revenue by the end of the year. And at that point, I was making about $1,000 a month. So it wasn't, it wasn't that I wasn't making anything, but I was just making it based on monthly updates to websites. It was very minimal kind of maintenance kind of stuff. And she looked at me and she said, that sounds like a lot. I don't know. Like, however you're going to do it, I don't know, but okay. And inside 6 months, I did it just because everything that came after that, I was able to vet them, look at them, turn them away and refer them or bring them on as a client because they were a good fit for me.
Right. So sounds like about 20 hours, give or take, of strategy followed by 6 months of implementation.
Pretty much.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, which means it's doable. It's not instantaneous, and I bet it's hard work.
100%. Yeah, because a lot of what happens in that meantime is that you have to build out that front sales line process, right? Because the existing clients that you have, they're going to refer more clients like themselves. And if those aren't the best clients for you, you have to put something in place, a filter in place to essentially stop them and refer them somewhere else so that you're not spending a lot of time in your sales calls or meetings or that kind of thing. Because that once you do that, then that's when the profits go right out the window too.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of the work from my end because I don't consider myself a salesperson. But for me, that was a lot of that upfront work to really pay attention to every single conversation that I had with a prospect to see if they were a fit or not and figure out what was that tipping point to put that tipping point further up the chain.
And now that you've gone through this and you have spent a number of years helping other freelancers turn their businesses around, what are some of the basic elements that you think are most needed to be able to run a successful freelancing business that delivers recurring revenue?
Well, first and foremost, it has to be your mindset. You have to at least put aside those self-doubts and fears that when you do specialize your business, that if you put the work in, it's going to pay out in the end anyway. A lot of fear and self-doubt come in when you say, okay, if I'm only working for these kind of clients, then every other client, the potential client that comes to me, I'm losing money out, which is not the case because once you become a specialist in your field, well, that commands premium rates and you could have 2-3 times more money from just one client than you would from 2 or 3 other clients. So that's first. Second is the discipline to not fall back into bad habits. And that's just more of a human trait rather than maybe as a freelancer or a business owner, because most freelancers start off generalized. And when they start to feel constrained by way of maybe bills are coming up, or they feel that, you know, okay, this end of this project or this customer might tail off, because you will, as recurring based business, you should know about how long a customer is going to last with you. If you start feeling that and you don't have anything else, you will fall back into bad habits, and you might take a lower rate or a position, you know, project that you might not really want or might not be as ideal as it could. And those projects inevitably end up bad. So a lot of it comes down by way of mindset and your discipline.
Mm-hmm. And are there, besides mindset and discipline, are there some other basic elements?
You have to, well, I mean, I hate to go on to the tools side of things because it varies based on your business, but you have to have a solid sales process and know what you can vet as far early on as possible. So for me, I just have an online form, right? If they don't fill out that online form and the call, you know, it comes either by voicemail or email or something like that, the lead comes by me, I send them to that online form. If they don't fill out that online form, then we don't even go further. But that online form also has specific questions that I need to know whether or not they're, one, their project, I can provide a solution to their project, or, and two, if we're a good fit to work together. So I put that filter right up front, save myself some time. You know, I'm religious about that process. If they don't fill out that form, no matter how urgent the project might be on their end, it still has to go through that process for me, because it collects all the data that I need and it puts them into my email sequences, follow-ups, it puts it into my CRM, puts it into my billing system. So that's the point at which everything else becomes much easier.
Yeah. Have you found yourself slipping and not sending somebody to that form?
Early on, I did.
Yeah.
There would be times where I would get a personal reference. So like, for example, if you sent me an email and say, hey, look, my friend John has a project and I think you'd be a great fit for it, I would jump at that in the past. Now, and oftentimes those don't pan out to be very good, you know, because I didn't put them through the process and there's certain things that were missed, you know, when I need it. Maybe they're, you know, because they didn't go through my onboarding sequence of follow-up. It could be logins to something that I didn't get, or, you know, something to the effect that something fell through the cracks. And that starts to whittle away at that relationship that you have, that level of professionalism that you have, especially if it's something that you need. And if I'm working at night and I need access to something that I don't have, well, I'm not going to expect my client to jump at the email if I send it off when I should have had it way early on.
Mm-hmm. So now at this point, given where your business is, who is your ideal client?
My ideal client is established online businesses built on WooCommerce that are looking to increase sales through optimization and behavioral marketing.
Pretty clear.
It took a long time, but yes.
And is there one problem that's most common that they have when they come to you?
Those people, yeah, they don't know enough about their customer base, which is odd, because what I do to help my service clients are to help get them more sales, more repeat sales, and essentially decrease the time from which their potential customers see them for the very first time to their very first purchase. And in order for me to do that, I need to know what those tipping points are of their customers on why they buy. What are their struggles? What are their pain points? What are their concerns? What's their incentive? What is their motivation to buy? These kind of things, oftentimes business owners do not know. They run Facebook ads and they just get the sales through, right? They work on essentially wording on an ad or an opt-in page or a webinar or something like that. And that wording could lead to that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be repeat buyers based on that. So I try to help them discover that through email, through on-site personalization surveys, these kind of things.
And in the end, you're saving them time, you're saving them money, and you're also helping them generate money.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So you're covering all the basic motivations for why someone would want to solve a problem.
Yeah. Yep.
And now you're currently working with WooCommerce clients and also with freelancers, helping them develop their freelance businesses.
Yes. Yeah. I help either by way of one-on-one coaching or a community called Feast, help other freelancers figure out what their specialty is and then put the processes in place in their business so that they can build the recurring revenue that they want.
And if someone from either of those types of clients wants to learn more about you, get in touch with you, or go deeper with whatever you've shared today, what's the best way to do that?
Best way to do that is going to rezz.com. That's with 3 Z's, R-E-Z-Z-Z.com. And I'm also on Twitter at Rezz. Same thing.
That's great. And is there a free gift that you'd like to offer our audience?
Yeah. One of the things, especially if you are a freelancer, web designer, web developer, one of the things that I put in place early on was essentially a sales process, which went out and grabbed opportunities and notified me of those opportunities, things like that are on Twitter, that are on Craigslist, which is still very valid these days, and other social platforms that essentially just by keyword searching, I don't have to spend all day on these platforms. It gets notified to me and it allows me to be first in line when that opportunity arises. And you can sign up for that right on my website.
Okay. So that's also at rezz.com with 3 Z's.
Yep.
Sounds great. Well, Jason, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us again on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a while since you were on, and I'm really grateful that you took time out to share some great insights with our listeners. My guest today has been Jason Resnick, freelancer and founder of Rezz.com. Thank you again, Jason, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David.
When you visit the Smashing the Plateau website at smashingtheplateau.com, you'll find a summary of each episode along with the links we mention on the show. Today, we discussed how to stop the feast or famine cycle that most freelancers experience and how to create and implement a freelance business turnaround strategy. Email me and let me know what you want to hear from our guests. That's david@smashingtheplateau.com. Please share this episode with friends and colleagues to help them smash the plateau. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show. I'll see you on our next episode.